Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Okay, now I'm recording.
Okay, that means we're back. Another episode of Peak Speak.
Here we are.
Back again. And I'm going to start this week with a question. It's not rhetorical, it's a genuine question. I've been soul searching about this. What the fuck is a crumpet?
So Sim made crumpets the other day. It's a bread product, but it's got a lot of butter in it, is my understanding. And there was something else that was different to like how you would make regular bread, but that turned out really good.
Yeah, see, like, is it bread? No, it's not
baked.
It's definitely not bread. It kind of looks like a pancake, and it's got a similar texture to pancake.
Yeah, I would say it's in between bread and a pancake.
Yeah,
so it's a bread, cause it's you, a bread cake. You fry them. So Sim like made the batter and then put it in egg rings, so you get like the nice circular thing, and then you fried it. She fried it like that, and then the theory is that then you can like keep them and then toast them. So we like had them toasted the next day.
You just said you baked it.
Yeah, I lied. I lied. I was wrong. I misremembered. It's probably a better description of that.
So the cooking process is like a pancake without flipping it.
Yes.
So it's a bread pancake.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. It was good though, and they were tasty.
Yeah, I mean, outside of like the species that they are, we can agree that they're fucking delicious.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, that's the main thing.
Seeking to classify things. That's the important.
What do you put on your crumpets?
It depends on the mood. I'm a peanut butter and jam kind of guy. Yeah. I relatively recently got into the combination of peanut butter and jam. Oh. I've always been like a jam fan and a peanut butter fan, but never really thought about combining them.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I'm all over that. Sim actually made like crumpet pizzas out of them the day after. With leftover pulled pork and espresso barbecue sauce and cheese and pickles. It was glorious.
That does sound amazing.
Yeah, it was. Speaking of amazing, how was your Wagyu rump cap?
My rump crap? Yes. It was really good. It was really good. So as you know, because I've asked you many questions about it, I've entered into the wonderful world of sous vide.
Is it vide or is it
sous vide? It's not, but I'm Australian, so I'm saying sous vide, mate.
Sous vide.
Sous vide. Sous vide. I've entered the wonderful world of sous vide. And I did it for 8 hours at 54.9 degrees. Seared it in a hell of a lot of butter.
Yes. It's the only way to cook anything like that.
Came out amazing.
Yeah, I've never really cooked rump cap before. I've heard a lot of good things about it, but I've never cooked it.
Yeah, well, I see Ophir cooks it all the time.
Yeah, okay.
And it seems to be a favorite for a sous vide recipe. And normally my butcher doesn't have it, and I walked in, they had these Wagyu rump caps just sitting there, and I'm like, okay, happy birthday to me.
Yeah, I'm just going to light this money on fire before I hand it to him.
Pretty much.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, you should experiment with sous vide like brisket and things like that go for a long time and then smoking them. So how I, because I'm too lazy to stand in front of a barbecue for 10 hours anymore. That's how I do like brisket and stuff these days is I'll sous vide it for anywhere from 24 to 48 hours and then just like take it out straight out of the sous vide and put it on the smoker. And like normally I just put it on my Weber and do it offset on the Weber with some wood of some variety. And then, you know, it takes... Like normally I probably put it on for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe a bit longer. And then you get all the smoky deliciousness and all the fall apart melting goodness that is a good bit of brisket.
Yeah, amazing. What temperature do you sous vide that on?
I think I did the last one at like 60 something.
Yeah.
You got to go a bit higher because it's brisket. I think I've got a photo of it somewhere. But yeah, it was, I think it's like somewhere in the 60s. And I do that now, is like when I do barbecues and stuff for the gym, it's really useful because I can basically do.
Yeah,
I can prep it all in advance. Like that's the great thing is you, because you can sous vide it, and then if you pull it out of the sous vide and chuck it straight in a like an ice bath, you can then just put it in the fridge.
Yeah,
and then reheat it whenever you need it.
Yeah. Awesome. Amazing.
We should get Stefan on and do
meat speak. I know, we've been meaning to do meat speak.
I think the only way to do meat speak is to have Stefan cook us an excellent meat buffet and then film it in all the glorious disgustingness that it will be.
I agree. Once comps are back on and he's doing something at your gym, we'll come and we'll, we'll definitely do it.
We should invite Sam too. Sam, that's, you're invited.
Definitely. That's the latest news. Queensland gyms are opening today. We had 24 hours notice, which is fantastic.
Yes. Classic Queensland.
So it's just I mean 24 hours notice. What's the difference between having 2 weeks and 24 hours if you get to open 2 weeks earlier, you know?
Here's the thing, man. I've had a couple of weeks notice, and what I did was leave all the things that I should have done 2 weeks ago to the last minute anyway, and so I've got a big couple of days ahead of me, and you know, I live my life by the motto that if you leave things to the last minute, they only ever take a minute. So it's fine. It's just efficient.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it's just a bit of a scramble to get as much equipment back as I can in the next 2 days at both gyms. And then we're back to the swing of it. But people start training from today at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's weird. We're in the final stages of like cleaning everything with the view that we're opening on Wednesday. Today's Monday. It's a public holiday in Canberra today, so we're like finalizing some facility stuff and getting all our equipment back, the last of it today, and then our cleaners are coming in and giving the place a real once over tomorrow so we can be open on Wednesday. I've also organized to have a photographer come and take a bunch of photos because I said to Jerry the other day, like, this is probably the cleanest this gym's ever going to be again, so we should get some photos.
Have you got all your equipment back?
Pretty much, yeah. Like, we got a couple of bars and some plates hanging about to get back. But then, yeah, we're good to go.
Is it feeling like a gym again? Not an eerie, like,
it actually feels an, sort of? It feels a lot like when we first moved into this space, like partially organized chaos.
Yep.
There's a lot of shit everywhere at the moment. And I was here with Jerry yesterday for most of the day. And I walked out at the end of the day and was like, I feel like we've made no progress. Like, we've done nothing. I spent an hour vacuuming spider webs out of windowsills and just like little things like that I've been putting off for ages because they're miserably fucking terrible jobs to do.
Yeah.
Doing that all, and then it feels like you've made no progress. So, yeah, it's frustrating.
It's the annoying thing when you know what a place is supposed to look like and it's tidy and clean and normal state, and you go from like absolute chaos to like 50% improvement and it still looks like absolute chaos.
Oh dude, exactly. And never ending. So these windows are like the big windows on the side near where the comp platform is, and because they're external facing windows, they have these diner bolted metal cages over them, which is great because it's secure as fuck, but also it's infuriating to clean. I spent like hours with just the nozzle of a vacuum poking it through the hole and like twisting it around enough to get all the spider webs. And I said to Jared, like, no one's going to notice that. Like, they're just going to be like, oh yeah, cool. Like, the gym looks like the gym. But if I don't do it, I'll fucking really know about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, yeah.
The hard thing is like within 2 months, all those spiders are going to be back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it'll probably take another pandemic for me to build up the desire to clean them again.
Yeah. Oh, it's exciting times though. Things are going to be back to semi-normal, and hopefully Australia can figuratively keep it in its pants and stave off this virus from spreading around again.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to see things sort of back in the swing of normal-ish. And just be able to see everyone in the person again. I said to someone the other day when I saw them at the gym, like, oh, it's nice to see you in a view that is anything other than from the exact same spot in your garage four times a week, because I've been, the only actual visual contact I've had with you is watching your training videos while you train in your garage.
Yeah,
it'll be good.
We had a few questions after the last episode around like planning comps and things like that, and it's, you know, someone suggested we do an episode on, you know, returning to competition after all of this happens. It's a really hard thing to talk about because you just don't know. Like, sure, yeah, let's plan a comp for November. Who's to say that the virus doesn't flare up and we shut everything down again?
Yeah, I had that discussion with someone who asked me about, like, when are we going to do states? And I was like, well, in order to do states, we would need the indoor limits to be at least 50 people for it to be viable, right? Because 50 people, if we can have a 50-person cap on the number of people inside our gym, what that realistically looks like is two flights of 15 lifters with no coaches and no spectators, and then 20 volunteers, because that's the amount of people it takes to run a comp. So for us, there's not much point in doing a novice comp like that, because it doesn't, like, it just makes for a miserable experience for a bunch of first-time lifters.
Yeah.
For a GPC comp, I think it's reasonable to say, hey, you're not allowed to bring a coach or a spectator or anything like that, because we'll live stream the whole thing and do all of that sort of stuff. But it's just not viable to do it any other way until we're at least at 100, I think. And even then, it might be viable, but is it the socially responsible thing to be doing? Perhaps not, you know. It's, yeah, man, I'm way more concerned about just getting people back in the gym and training than I am about dealing with comp dates or anything like that at the moment.
The socially responsible thing is a funny comment, because that, you know, I toy with that idea in my head a bit as well. It's like, you know, even when we can have 100 people in a room, should we have 100 people in a room?
Yeah.
But I mean, you can scale that back all the way down to like gyms opening today. You're only allowed 20 people at a time. It's like, is it socially responsible to have 20 people at a time? It's like,
well, oh yeah, dude.
The whole point of having the restrictions and guidelines is to you know, manage that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to test your morality on, I suppose, or to challenge your morality on. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That's all I have to
say. Yeah, man, I don't have an answer either, to be honest. And that's, I think that's more than anything, that's what I want people to realize. It's like, we're all just trying to figure this out as we go. This is the most ridiculous thing any of us are probably ever going to have to deal with from a business standpoint. And there's no real precedent for it. So everyone just needs to like take a breath and perhaps remember that people like Thomas and I and all of our friends who own gyms and run comps and all of those sort of things are doing our best, because we've all just experienced an incredibly stressful time period in the owning a business life cycle. And some of us are still just trying to get our heads above water in a way that means we can kind of get back to normal life.
For sure.
And we care about your comps almost as much as you do, if not more. But we're not going to be rushing any of it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I also think it's important, like, that I don't want to put on a comp just for the sake of putting on a comp if it's going to be a compromised product, you know, because the competitions that we run are a representation of our gym. That's one of our products. And yeah, I don't want to run one that's at a compromise scale and everyone hates it, because then that becomes the defining feature of our first comp back after the coronavirus.
I mean, if there's one thing to take away from what Queensland's done over the weekend, is like, expect the unexpected. Like,
exactly,
who knows what's going to happen over the next 3 months. However, you know, rest assured that meat directors, you and I alike, and all the rest of them are doing their best to try and work out a solution that's viable and acceptable for everyone. And it will come.
Yeah, it'll, and like we've said in more than one episode over this period, a year or two from now, we're all going to look back on this sort of 6 month, maybe 8 month period of time and be like, wow, that was a crazy ride, and we'll all just be moving forward anyway. So it'll, you know, it'll be okay.
Yeah, and I suppose now's a good time to stop talking about our least favorite thing to talk about, you know, COVID, and talk about our second least favorite thing to talk about, which is strongman. No, I'm just kidding, but that's what we're talking about today.
That was one of your better segues for some time. I mean, you may have just ruined 50% of our audience by ostracizing a bunch of people who are actually just more significantly talented athletes than us powerlifters, but...
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't be a good generic powerlifting coach if you didn't make a good generic strongman joke, right?
Yeah, it's almost as good as a generic CrossFit joke.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like those are so 2010, though.
Yeah, exactly. Strongman's the new CrossFit. It's like CrossFit, but heavier.
Yeah, so someone flagged an episode idea around incorporating strongman and powerlifting training together. That someone, in fact, was our media team, Sam. Thank you very much.
Shout out, Sam.
For the suggestion.
Buy his prints. He takes real good photos.
So where do you start when you start thinking about training for strongman and you know, having people that may want to cross over? What does that start to look like for you?
I think so. I definitely have quite a bit of this because we have a very comprehensive strongman setup, and like, you know, without wanting to toot our own horn, we have the best strongman setup between Sydney and Melbourne. And so we get quite a few people who are interested in either they're coming to us to compete in strongman, or because they want to get into strongman, or they've been training with us for a while, done a bit of powerlifting, and they're interested in then trying strongman as the next sort of challenge, or some combination of the both. And I think ultimately the most important part of the conversation is understanding where that individual is in terms of their, not just like physical age, but training age as well, and training experience and those sort of things. Because I think this discussion looks very different talking to someone like Tyson, who we've had on the podcast, who's a world-class elite level athlete, and someone who has only been training for six months to sort of 2-3 years. You know, that's a very different equation. And we talked about it with Tyson, but I think a very good strongman is always going to be built on a barbell base. And I think the biggest mistake I've seen a lot of very new or novice strongman lifters make, especially in the last sort of 5 or 6 years, as strongman has improved in terms of its reach and its accessibility, is it's like, it's really fun. So people just want to train events all the time. And that might be a really fun way to train, but it's not necessarily the way that is most conducive to long-term progress.
Mm-hmm.
Because, ultimately, if you don't have the base of strength and the base of skill in lifting barbells, then adding a bunch of odd implements and moving events and things like that is going to be very different and not necessarily give you the time to build the foundational skill that's going to set you up for a long career.
Mm-hmm.
Basically start with a barbell. I think that's the first part, because if you can be strong at squatting and deadlifting and overhead pressing with a barbell, then you're going to have a pretty good base to work from in just about any strongman event. So yeah, that's where I start for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's going to be a very similar process. It's straight to the principles for me. It's like, if we're not satisfying the principle of progressive overload, we're not going anywhere. And one thing that's really tempting when you start to look at something like strongman, it's a new flavor, it's exciting, there's a lot of variety all of a sudden. It's really easy to max out every week without realizing you're maxing out every week. And you wouldn't do that for powerlifting. You wouldn't go and, well, you probably would at the start, but you've learned very quickly that approach to training doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that this idea of just, you know, going and testing your stone or your log or whatever every week is just maxing out every week, or, you know, going too far down like the high end percentage, peaking sort of percentages way, which doesn't make you bigger, doesn't make you stronger. So you're always doing triples and doubles, because it's like, well, you wouldn't do sets of eight with a stone. So we're just going to do triples and doubles. It's like, yeah, but that would be like saying you wouldn't do sets of eight with a deadlift. So you're just always going to do doubles and triples. It just doesn't work from a training standpoint in terms of progressive overload. The other interesting thing you've got with strongman, powerlifting is pretty unique in that the sport and the training are pretty much the same. You know, of course, yep. there's the difference in terms of one rep max and percentages and RPEs and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But the actual exercise selection is pretty much exactly the same. And it's very simple in that way because there's only three main exercises plus their accessories. And strongman, with all these different apparatus and directions and styles of lifting and moving things, all of a sudden there's a lot more to do. So now we take a general training split. And we generally call a microcycle a week of training, and we use the calendar week to define a week of training. When you're doing strongman stuff, maybe because there's a broader spectrum of exercises, now your whole training paradigm looks a little bit different. Maybe now your microcycle extends over 10 days or 14 days. A week of training is now 14 days. But that idea of like basing it on your experience is really, really, really going to be important, because a lot of the stuff when it comes to logs and stones and a lot of the other weird and wonderful apparatus is really just a very, very, very specific application of general strength. That specificity, that skill is quite easy to attain. The general strength takes time and takes work, and it's often best done in stuff that doesn't look like what you're doing. I do want to curtail off that and sort of say that one sort of mistake I see a lot of people make when they transition from powerlifting to strongman is that they treat that they might come in with that attitude, strongman training is just powerlifting as an off season, then being specific as you come towards comps. That's all well and good, but you being really good at bench press probably isn't going to do shit for your strongman career. So maybe now we start to rationalize things a bit better. Instead of looking at leg strength equals low bar squats, we look at leg strength equals leg strength. High bar squat, front squat, overhead squat, leg press, hack squat, you know, anything that trains your leg strength doesn't have to be low bar squat. Upper body strength equals bench press. No. Upper body strength can equal a whole bunch of different things. The cool thing is deadlifts kind of equal deadlifts, and there's a lot of deadlifting in strongmen.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I guess the big take home message that we're both trying to say is that like hyper specificity and that hyper focus on events training probably isn't going to serve you well. And that's even true to be said of like what this subject is supposed to be aimed at, which is, you know, training both of them at the same time. You'll see a lot of the top, strongmen who do powerlifting as well, or top powerlifters who do strongmen as well, do spend most of their time doing general strength training, not events sort of training.
Yeah, and it's because those, especially as you get stronger, those really heavy event days are brutal. I am coaching a reasonably accomplished strongman who does exactly what you were saying about. We have sort of spread his training cycle out, or microcycle out, over 2 weeks so that we can have like a session that is a heavy pressing session. It's a heavy, an events like deadlifting session, things like that, but also incorporate other sessions that aren't just battering him into the ground constantly. Because that's the biggest thing, I think, from a longevity standpoint with the strongman stuff, is if you're not paying attention to, like you said, the specificity around not just exercise selection, but also rep ranges and loading patterns and all of those sort of things, then it's very easy to run yourself into the ground very, very quickly, because the temptation is just like, yeah, well, I do heavy yoke today and then I'll do some heavy stones 2 days from now, and then, farmer's walks for distance, and then suddenly you realize you've actually just been hit by a bus and you can't train for 2 weeks. Like these, especially with some of the really heavy moving events, they're, I think, inducing a significantly larger amount of fatigue from a whole systems approach than like just a heavy squat where you stand in one spot and you go up and down once or twice and then that's it. You know, like 25 steps with a 350 kilo yoke on your back is going to feel a lot different the next day than just standing still. And I think the other thing that people get caught up in, especially people who have become somewhat accomplished powerlifters and then convert into strongman, is they get too caught up in the training for powerlifting as a sport and, like you said, training for general strength, because they are very different. The people that I coach whose sport of choice is strongman don't low bar squat, because it's just generally not worth it. I like the guy I was just referencing, exclusively safety bar squats, because he's a big dude, his shoulder mobility is not excellent. We don't need to stuff him under a small barbell every week and wreck his shoulders so that he can't press for 3 days. because he can get a lot of the leg, core, torso strength and skill aspects of the squat out of a safety bar squat without the pressing being sort of ruined later in the week. So there's a lot of balance around how you choose the exercises and removing bias from one or the other, you know, like, because especially from powerlifting and strongman, realistically, they're two sports that go very well together.
For sure.
You couldn't really pick two sports that are more conducive to success in both than powerlifting and strongman. I would really struggle to think of one, because even something like powerlifting and weightlifting isn't the same, because the skill demand of weightlifting is so high that you really can't do anything other than just be very good at that. And anything else, it's too different, you know? So I think, it's very easy to, it's not very easy, it's reasonably simple to be very good at both, as long as you can remove, or at least can question your own bias around why you're choosing exercises, you know, being objective about what it is that you're trying to do with each training microcycle or each block or each year. You know, you can shift your focus in the right areas as long as you're reasonably critical about the choices you make.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I think, you know, we've definitely covered the two big things for consideration at first. And then where you go from here is, you know, what's going to be the same consideration as if you're training for any other sport or any endeavor, which is, you know, focus on what needs to be focused on. If you're 3 or 4 months out of a strongman meet, maybe that's when you start to put the powerlifting style stuff on the back burner. Maybe you're doing a lot less back squatting or a lot less bench pressing. Maybe now is the time where you start bringing in a lot more of the event style training. You know, eventually one goal is going to have to take the back seat while the other goal takes precedence at that time. Yeah. And it's no different to planning any goals that conflict with each other or that are going to hold each other back. If you want to be really good, if you want to be the best at something and you're doing two things and you're trying to be the best at both of them at the same time, you're always going to be kind of shitty at both.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. You're not going to excel at both at the same time to the level that you potentially could. If you are excelling at both of them at the same time, you could excel even better without one of the other, you know, if you're pushing both at the same time. You guys know what I'm trying to say. That just came out really sloppy for some reason.
But it's the discussion. It's because everyone has that discussion all the time. Like, oh, Hapthor's so excellent at strongman. He should just do powerlifting and he'd be so great. It's like, well, A, no one's going to pay Hapthor to do powerlifting. He's a fucking professional strongman. And B, the sacrifices he has to make from a strongman competition standpoint are the things that are going to mean he's not going to be a good powerlifter.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like flicking a switch like that. There are, you know, genetic predispositions and training history and background that will allow you to be successful, but you're still going to have to shift that focus at a certain point. And, you know, potentially you're also then up against people who've just been doing it longer.
Mm.
You know, that's where someone like when I think it was Carmichael Hunt who went and played NFL. It's like, the dude's an incredible athlete, but he got fucking ruined by people who've been playing NFL for 15 years.
Yeah.
Because, like, they might not be as good at you from a pure athleticism standpoint. Skill development wins every time, you know? Like, if you've just been doing it for longer, you're probably going to be better at it.
Mm.
So I think remembering that is important as well, especially in the transition. If you've spent 5 years training for powerlifting and got kind of good at powerlifting, expect to spend about that again in strongman.
Hmm.
You know, sure, some of it will be shortened in terms of your ability to pick movement skill and stuff like that up, but if you're going to dedicate the time to be really good at it, then give it the time. Like, don't just expect the transfer to be one-to-one.
Yeah,
I think that trying to rush that transition is the most common mistake, because people just go, oh, yeah, well, it's just strongman, but you got to take more steps. It's just powerlifting, but you got to take more steps, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think patience, like anything, is also a virtue.
For sure. And I mean, we don't want to come across as demonizing the idea of training for events, because there's nothing wrong with that. Like, do your events training.
It's heaps of fun.
but don't max out on them every week, you know?
Yeah.
And take a more thoughtful pursuit to how you're bringing that events training in, and try and listen to what your body's telling you in terms of, like, is this beating me up? is doing stones once or twice a week fucking my back to the point where I can't deadlift properly? Or is, you know, is the amount of volume I'm doing because I've added three extra events this weekend beating me up to the point where I can't recover enough to bring the same intensity to my next session? You're just going to have to wisen up when you incorporate something like Strongman that has a slightly broader spectrum to ensure that you're still getting the training outcomes that you're looking for. And don't skip out on conditioning style work, like more dynamic sort of strength work as well, because that's going to be a massive skill and asset for strongmen.
That was exactly what I was actually going to say when you finished there, was that by all means, train lots of events, but training heavy events is not the only way to train events. Like, that's the really important thing. You can do an events day where it's a skill acquisition day, right? The goal is not to work at 100%, it's to work at 85% and be very good at it, or do it in the time domains that suit the competition that you're training for. I think conditioning, especially for someone who's spent a lot of time just being a powerlifter, is almost always going to be the thing that lets you down first and foremost, is your ability to not only move under weight in a variety of ways, but also recover from multiple events across a day. Like, strongman as a competition is much more taxing than powerlifting because it's just a longer day. The events go for longer. Instead of 30 seconds of lifting in total across 6 hours, you get 4 or 5 minutes of lifting because some of the events go for 60 seconds or longer, you know? So I think the conditioning aspect especially is the one that actually probably benefits both anyway. You know, because being a more well-rounded and well-conditioned athlete will allow you then to do more powerlifting-specific work. You'll have a better base, so you'll be able to do more work. And, you know, ultimately, the more work you can do, the stronger you're going to be.
Yeah, perfect. What was you mentioned to me earlier before we started about the lifter you have who's transitioning from powerlifting to rowing?
Yeah, so I think talking about training for multiple sports is always interesting. And obviously, as we said, strongman and powerlifting are very conducive to success in both. But I think the interesting discussion is also, like, what do you do when you're training for sports that are very, very different or on very different ends of the spectrum? So one of the guys that I coach has, like, rowed in the past. I think, you know, through school and stuff, he was a competitive rower. And has been training exclusively for powerlifting for a while. Over the last year or so, spent some time building his running capacity back up because he used to be in the military and so did a lot of running. And yeah, it came to me to have a discussion about the end of his current training block, and was talking about a desire to go back to a bit of competitive rowing stuff. And essentially what that'll look like for him is sort of 6 months of the year will be focused purely on competitive powerlifting, and then the other 6 months will be in a boat rowing. And, you know, we had a discussion about what training looks like for that. And I think it's really the situation is the antithesis of powerlifting and strongman, because they're two sports that really couldn't be any further from each other in terms of energy system demands and those sort of things. And so, yeah, we had a really interesting chat about what that looks like. And I think actually, when done well, you can be successful at both. But the biggest part of that discussion was exactly what you said before, which is that if you want to be really good at one of them, then at a certain point, you just have to pick one. But if you're okay with the slight compromises in performance that you'll get by focusing on two across a year, right? Because it's not like it's like every 6 weeks we're switching goals. Like, 6 months is a reasonable chunk of time. So I think for him it's going to look like 6 months of the year where we're doing much more competition specific powerlifting training style stuff, and then when he gets back in a boat and starts rowing again, it'll really just be about maintaining his strength. He won't need to do a lot of higher rep stuff in the gym, because all of his sort of conditioning boat focused stuff is going to be in the boat, right? It's at no point in his transition into rowing is his strength going to be the reason he's not rowing well. So it means we can do the stuff we're doing in the gym with the focus on maintaining skill and a moderate level of strength through that season while he spends time rowing. And that'll probably mean one less session in the gym a week, and a bit more compressed in terms of the amount of work we're doing. But then that work capacity base that he's going to have at the end of a rowing season means we'll be able to transition pretty quickly into just hammering strength work while then just kind of maintaining his cardio base enough to then carry him through into the next season. So I think it's possible to do in a variety of different ways. You know, it's just about first and foremost understanding the principles of things like progressive overload and specificity and basic understanding of energy system demands and those sort of things. I think can really help you solidify your toolbox when it comes to building out training for multiple sports. Because I mean, ultimately, if you just want to have a bit of fun and enjoy a bunch of different things, that's great. Like, that's what I've been doing lately, riding bikes, lifting weights occasionally. I kind of like the idea of being a little bit average at a lot of things rather than focusing on one particular thing, because that's what I'm interested in at the moment. And I think it can be done really well, yeah, as long as you pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that's great advice. And I think it's important for people to understand that when you're sort of talking about like the dip in performance between shifting between, it's only a momentary dip, right? It's like while you're focusing on one, the performance is going to dip in the other. That's the whole fucking point.
Yeah, exactly.
The advice that I give in the coach development system around, like, when we get to the section on programming and we're talking around programming for non-powerlifters, programming for sports people, is like, now all of a sudden, all the stuff that you know and rationalize and understand around strength training is an accessory. Like, your understanding of building strength is now serving globally as an accessory to this person's sport. So think about the stuff that no longer matters. Peaking doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Conditioning doesn't matter, because they tick that off in their sport if it's a conditioning based sport.
Yeah.
Sport specific training doesn't matter, because they're doing that in their sport. Don't jump on Google and be like, what's the best way to train a rower, and then find out all these like special rowing exercises. It's like, they're doing their sport. Let them do their sport. We're just serving to, it's like, you know, John Shallow talking about high end strength and conditioning. Our job is to make sure they don't fall over and hurt themselves in the weight room, right?
Yeah,
we're doing our job, which we know, which is building general strength, and we're not trying to think too far outside of the box. Yeah, be creative, but your critical thinking needs to go more towards, what is going to be a waste of time for this person? What is going to be too much for this person? How can I use the time that I have with this person to ensure that everything they do here is for the benefit of their sport, not their ego, not my ego as a coach, purely for their sport, to make them better at their sport?
Yeah, man. I had a very similar discussion when I did the presentation at the end of last year for the climbing high performance summit that I presented at. Duncan, the guy who's the like Australian climbing coach, and he was the guy that organized the whole thing, he presented before me, and he put up a pyramid of specificity, right, where he talked about climbing training, and it was, you know, general physical fitness was at the bottom, and then it was like finger strength and a bunch of different very specific climbing things. And that was great, because I saw him put that up and was like, excellent, I have one of those in my presentation as well. And the way I described it to people was to take my whole pyramid and put it in the bottom layer of his pyramid, because everything that I do in terms of strength and conditioning in the gym is general physical preparedness for everything else. And like you said, being able to not just be critical of exercise selection and things like that, but also to like just keep it relatively simple. Like, the first point I made in my presentation was, pick the low-hanging fruit. You know, when it comes to climbers, most of them have never lifted a weight in their life beyond like some weighted pull-ups. And so it's like, okay, well, maybe just do some squats and maybe some really some deadlifts. And then we start with that and we build on that. You know, it doesn't have to be super complex and highly specific from day one. It needs to be a progressive build, not just in terms of volume and workload and stuff, but also in terms of the complexity of the training. You know, being complex and fancy just for the sake of being complex and fancy doesn't fucking do anything useful.
For sure. And I think we'll stop there in terms of going down that rabbit hole, because we've actually done a whole episode on this. So jump back and find that. I can't remember the number. It's in this.
No, neither can I.
Just search for like programming for sports or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that.
On and off note, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was on Rogan a couple of times. He did like a solo unassisted traverse of Antarctica and a sail across the base of South Africa, which is like the most
Cape of Good Hope or whatever.
The worst waters in the world.
Yeah.
I think they did like America, South Africa or something like that. But In his podcast with Rogan, he talks a lot about what his trainer would do for him to train specifically for both events. It's really interesting. Because that is a case of like, this is not the conditions that are nice and controlled and easy like most sports. Like, this is something super, super extreme, and they got pretty creative. And yeah, listening to that was pretty cool.
Yeah, man. And you can go down a lot of rabbit holes when it comes to that. But if you're... It's not that going down those rabbit holes doesn't have any value. It's that if you're going down those rabbit holes for the sake of going down the rabbit holes and nothing else,
yeah,
then it's a waste of time.
Exactly. Sweet.
Excellent.
Wonderful.
That's us. I hope we get to see a whole bunch of you in gym soon.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And you too. A couple of days. Yes. Exciting times.
Yes, Wednesday. It'll be good.
All right.
It'll be very good.
Screenshot it. Put it on your Instagram. Share us.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera.
Tell your mum.
Yeah.
I really hope he puts all of that in there.